You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now, the good people at The Newsroom released a profile of Itangata this week, prompting a discussion around the lack of Māori and Pacifica voices in mainstream media. I caught up with one of the editors and founders of ET, Gary Wilson, to find out more, beginning with the all-important question of how the magazine came about.
Well, it's not so much the culmination, but I suppose another step along the way that goes right back to probably 1980, when there was a national survey of journalists, and the figures there were that fewer than 2% of New Zealand's journalists were Māori or Pacific Island extraction. And that figure, which wasn't a surprise to a lot of us, alarmed the New Zealand Journalist Training Board enough to set in motion or to back some moves to try and do a whole lot better than that. You know, and over the years, the steps have been initially a series of five-day, very practical introductory courses for Māori and Pacific Island students to get them having a taste of journalism. And then some of those students, well, scores, in fact, through the 1980s, going on to the courses that were already established in Wellington and Auckland. And then another step was setting up a Māori course at Wairiki in Rotorua. And another step was a Pacific Island course, journalism course at Manukau. And another step was Derek Fox and I and Piripi Whanga setting up Mana Māori Media, which gathered quite a lot of expertise, mostly Māori, but also Pacifica and Pākehā, and feeding radio programs into national radio and into the iwi network, and then setting up Mana magazine. And then, you know, through into, well, around about 2004 or 2005, we set up an independent charitable trust called the Mana Trust, which was again an effort to strengthen the presence of Māori and Pacific Island voices and presence in the media. And that carried on for several years with the support of the Tyndall Foundation, and the Tyndall Foundation was pretty happy with what we were able to do there. And so when we came to them again, knocking on their door about 3 years ago, suggesting that it would be handy if we had some help in setting up an online magazine, they fronted up again. And so that's kind of the sequence.
Right, so it's kind of just the digitization of this magazine that's a newer venture, but it's in actuality been going on for decades.
Oh yeah, it's a cause that we've been whacking away at for quite some time.
And so The Best of Itangata was recently published by Bridget Williams Books, and it cited Itangata as providing some of the most incisive and profound commentary on life in New Zealand. Is this due in part because it draws on the thoughts and observations of people that don't necessarily receive the platform in mainstream media?
Well, I mean, it was kind of a flattering comment because, I mean, not all that we produce anyway is incisive and top quality. But yes, I think it stands out partly, or maybe even significantly, as you're suggesting, because as a rule, the mainstream media presents bugger all in that territory. I mean, it's not as if there isn't any focus on Māori and Pacific things, but there's no consistent coverage or sort of
mainstream coverage.
Yeah, so, you know, thoughtful coverage in the mainstream. There's still much too much of a tendency to chase brown things when there's a, you know, a potential controversy or misbehavior or whatever. I mean, no, and I don't believe that that's, you know, particularly, there's anything particularly evil in the intentions there. It's just that for quite understandable historical reasons, mainstream media is still staffed by people who don't know too much about things Māori or things Pacific.
So just touching on that a little bit more, we have Māori television providing shows like Media Take and R&R with Robert Rakete, and then TVNZ's got Te Karere and Tangata Pacifica. Yeah. Has there been a significant shift in the representation of brown perspectives in recent times, or do you think this is still very much considered a niche thing?
Oh, very, very niche, I think, and with not much reach. I don't know the figures for any of those programs, but, you know, I have heard some in the past, and, for example, Māori television, and it doesn't have big numbers. And, you know, to take Te Karere, for instance, or Te Kaia, the news program on MTS, with them being in Māori, certainly they, you know, they don't have much reach into a mainstream Pākehā audience. And that's not to say they don't have a value, but it's still, I mean, it's hard to think, maybe even impossible to think of any radio or TV Māori programs that have a significant reach.
Mm. Has that reach kind of influenced then the decision to publish I Tangata in English?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things that we're really supportive of, and if we were bigger and stronger and, you know, had more steroids one way or another pumped into us, we would be hammering away at the need for much more effective promotion of Reo Māori. But we would be doing that in English because, you know, most of the significant decision makers don't speak Māori. And, I mean, we've got an exception at the moment with Heke Aparata as the Minister of Education. But, you know, if we set her aside for the moment, there's almost nobody particularly visible who's a Māori speaker and who's influential in mainstream decisions. And so, the debate, the forum for the discussion, the arguments and so forth really need to be carried on significantly in English. I mean, you know, hopefully they've carried on particularly strongly in Reo Māori as well. But, you know, we don't have the capacity to do that, but more particularly, we don't believe that that's the most effective way to advance the argument. And I've got an Irish whakapapa, and I feel quite comfortable, partly, I suppose, because of that Irishness, to embrace the idea that the most effective way to advance Reo Māori is through Reo Pākehā.
I see. Well, it kind of sounds like you've described this air of exclusivity, maybe, that is quite common with independent media platforms. Is I Tangata just for Māori and Pacifica peoples, or is this another misconception?
I'm sorry, I talked over you there.
No, is it just another misconception that a lot of people seem to have about these kind of niche media platforms, if you will?
Well, it could be, but what we're really aiming for, and we don't know how far down the track that is, but the Māori and Pacific thing is just, you know, we see it, Tapu and I particularly, and Stacey and Morrison and Dale Husband and the others, Moana Maniapoto, in the sort of inner circle of ET. We really see that the, you know, Māori particularly is the first step that we need to take, but right back in 1980 when we started doing the introductory courses, we combine that with, you know, Pacific interests as well. And so that's been, for us, quite a comfortable and sensible and workable and productive combo.
Mm.
But what we're really looking forward towards is what we would hope a professional mainstream media system would be providing, is that is expertise, you know, covering the whole of New Zealand society. And, you know, so that there's, you know, we're pushing in a sense through the media for social justice. And so that means trying to deal with the injustice that affects not just Māori, although that's considerable, and not just Samoans and Tongans and so forth, although that's considerable, but Chinese and Indian and Fijian and Somalis and so forth. The difficulty is that the New Zealand, or among the significant difficulties, are that the education system has been very narrow and white. And unfortunately, but I suppose inevitably, the media system has just followed on and been very narrow and white. And we're just trying to do what we can to broaden that coverage and broaden that commitment and broaden the efforts to try and make New Zealanders, New Zealand, much more inclusive society, naturally inclusive society.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, these institutions being intrinsically narrow and white, there was that survey that you kind of touched on earlier that was conducted by the Department of Māori and Pacific Island Affairs that found around 1.7% of journalists in the nation newsrooms were Māori or Pacifica. So
sure. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, are diversity quotas a viable way to address these kind of statistics?
Oh,
Tricky, isn't it?
Well, no, I don't want to quota system. I mean, I think from our experience over, well, if we go back to, you know, use 1980 for the moment as a sort of convenient starting point. The experience we've had, particularly when we were, you know, we had a fairly big and modern standard, a reasonably powerful and professional organisation with Manamori Media, where we had the capacity and followed through with that capacity on doing a lot of radio, and we did Mana Magazine, and we also did, you know, had the capacity, particularly through people like Derek Fox, to do a bit of television as well. And what we had then was a critical mass of, I was going to say brown expertise, but it was expertise to do with largely, almost exclusively, with brown issues and brown personalities. And the expertise came from journalists who were predominantly Maori, but were also, you know, quite a bunch of Pacific journos and Pākehā journalists who were comfortable in that area. And rather than push for the Herald or Radio New Zealand or TV One or anyone else to have a quota of brown journos, I think it's probably much, much more effective to build media organisations with a brown kaupapa that really are big enough and powerful enough and well enough informed to provide a worthwhile voice that's available to mainstream media. And in a small way, that's what we're building towards right now. But it's because of that experience that if you don't have that critical mass, you don't have the capacity to deliver top quality material.
Lastly, why is it so important to uplift Māori and Pacifica voices in the media?
Well, the media is there, you know, has a number of roles, but one role, a reasonable role, I think, is to reflect New Zealand society back to itself, but also to provide enough information that that society then can make intelligent decisions about how it should go. And if the media doesn't have, you know, sufficient knowledge or expertise or commitment to look closely at the situation, the pluses and minuses in Maori worlds and in PI worlds, well, it can't deliver that, and so that's a significant failing and a costly failing too, not just for the Maori and Pacifica, but also costly for Pākehā and any other tauiwi who, you know, New Zealand, because they miss out on that Polynesian richness. I mean, we're here in that, you know, in a Polynesian country. And yet, we're in situations where almost inevitably Pākehā grow up ignorant, or pretty ignorant of those other worlds, and that's a cost to them, I believe, cost to all of us.
Rewire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.